thoughts from Rav Hirsch. Again, I don't have the copies, so I'm not going to read them inside. But he sees precious by Yetzeh is the building of the Jewish home. Okay, and the point to which he stresses throughout, and really this is really, if you understand, think about it, this was the fight that he was fighting. You know, the reform movement was you'd be a Jew in the temple and you'd be a German at home. And he's saying, no, the synagogue is a secondary reality. The primary place that you're a Jew is in the home. Right? Whether you make it a shul or not is irrelevant in that regard. So the primary definition of what defines Klal Yisrael is the bias. He points this out in the beginning of Parashas Bamidbar. Klal Yisrael is counted, the Mishpacha Yisrael, are counted by Mishpachas. Mishpacha is the primary element of who we are. I was thinking of a different point, which it's not. I think it's a concurrent point, and actually, I think actually more than that, it's a complementary point. There's a fascinating Ramban beginning of Parshas by Yishlach. Ramban beginning of Yishlach. I said I didn't make copies, so I'm just going to have to let me talk.
Being upset with me, Sam.
So the Ramban brings that from a Chazal that whenever Chachamim would have to go and interface with Edom, they would read the parsha of Yishlach beforehand, how Yaakovino prepared himself for his encounter with Esav. We have a count of myself with Simon Abonim, so they took that. So this is the parsha of Golus. So really, this is the parsha which is going to give us the myself a similar bottom of how to deal with Golus.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I think I mentioned to you once that my father's, I have yurtzeit with my father Sunday night. So my father's first yurtzeit, the Russian gave me matana. So my sister was still, one of my sisters was still living in Cleveland. She's actually lives in Houston now. Every different sister lives in Cleveland now. But that sister, I only had one sister living in Cleveland at that point in time. And Aish did their, I don't know what they've done subsequently, I don't know, but at that point in time it was the first time they ever done a discovery program in Cleveland. So Motzei Shabbos was when they present the codes, which is very fascinating. So my sister agreed, the Yortzeit was Motzei Shabbos, she agreed to go to this event. So, and they show this idea that you found embedded in the words in the Torah at different intervals, different words, etc. So the word that they found in the parsha of Vayetze, which came up multiple times again and again in the same interval, was the word Golus. So it's not mentioned anywhere before Vayetze. In the parsha of Vayetze, it comes up again and again at these set intervals, the word Golus, you know, a Gimel, 49 letters later, an Alamed, 49 letters later, above, and then a Sof, and then again. Throughout the parsha, the word comes, the Golus comes up, and they showed you how it played out. So the fascinating thing is that this is the parsha of Golus. That's what it is. Really, this is the parsha of Golus. So that would mean that if we want to know how to deal with Golus, we can look to this parsha. The same way the Ramban says that they looked at the parsha of Yitzhak, how to go interface with the Roman government, because Yaakov was the cue for that. So the Chardin should be cues for here of how to deal with Golus. Okay. So I think some of the points that the person is going to talk about when he talks about the point of bias take on a deeper meaning or a broader meaning, that he sees that this parsha is the parsha of Yaakov establishing a bias, and he sees many Ramazim over here to that effect. I think that's a message of how Klal Yisrael survived throughout the Golus. Because the only thing which you could sort of keep intact for sure was your bias. The government you didn't have. That you were able to act as a community, that wasn't always necessarily true. But within your own Dalet Amos, you had control. And that's what made you a Jew. Was that without the Dalet Amos? So that's the first point. So he says like this, that's that he says that the sulam is mutzavartza, which means Rashi Magi Hashemayim, or the point he sees that a void of a person is here in this world, Ikrishkinim Atatayinim, because I'll say in the sixth parasha, that the main place the person dwells is down here in this world, not in Shemayim. I just saw a fascinating piece, this is totally parenthetical, from a Volvo. We talk about chinuch for children. He says, when you talk about where is Hashem, what should you tell the child? He says, don't tell the child Hashem is in Shemayim. Right? Because
Hashem is truly everywhere.
Hashem is, Uncle Moshe, right? It's a fair to Uncle Moshe, right? Right? Because that's first of all, he's not limited to there. And second of all, that's very confusing to the child. So when the plane flies, is the same flying with Hashem? No, it means above that. Like, oh, so when they go with the rocket, they with Hashem, did the astronaut see Hashem? There's all these questions which you're generating, he says, which are not healthy for the kid. Okay, so Hashem is right here in this room. You just can't see him. Right? He doesn't like that either. Because for a child, that creates this idea that there's something in the room that he can't see. So he goes to bed at night that night, you walk out, and he says, there's something in the room I can't see. He doesn't know how to...
That's interesting.
So he says that Hashem is present everywhere, right? It's a challenging concept. I mean, so why can't we see him? So there's a fascinating thought from Rabbi Kaplan. This is not what you tell a kid. Not Rabbi Kaplan, for sure not. Right? Rabbi Kaplan says a fascinating thing. He says, the reason why you can't see Hashem, because you only notice things by contrast. And Hashem is everywhere, so there's no contrast. Right?
That's interesting.
If you'd be inside the sun, you wouldn't see the sun, because it would be so gigantic, all you see was the sun. You wouldn't see sun. You wouldn't recognize that as a sun, because it's all over. Right? It's only because you can get some distance and see there's sun, and there's not sun. Oh, that's where the sun is. So the ability to recognize something, that's a fascinating general thought of in learning. Now I'm really going off, right? Right. A lot of learning was through contrast. I understand what this Gemara means by defining how it's different from that Gemara. The idea of the hair splitting wasn't just for fun. It was that gave me a clear definition of what this means. Because while this is not that, there's clearly different halachas. So what is the point why they're different? Now I understand what this is. So the contrast acts as a very, very powerful way to recognize something. So you can't see Hashem, he said, because Hashem is everywhere. So there's no contrast.
So what did Rav say to tell the children?
Rav Alba said to tell the children that Hashem's presence is everywhere, and we find ways, we just can't see him, and we find ways to interface with him. But he's not here in this room. He's all around. It's up, down, down, here, there, everywhere. Right? Welcome, Moshe, spoke to Rav Alba first. So, but the Ikrishkin with Tatarim, because I'll say, the Barsham didn't create the world that he wanted to put his presence in Shemayim. Barsham's goal was to put his presence down here. But what he added to the world, that he's talked about the Beis Elohim, that we create a presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world. So he contrasts that to the idea of seeing Kadosh Baruch Hu in nature. The Mishnah says, a person is mafling me mishnosoi. He says, "Kamen oyun zeh, raising his type of nafshos." That's pretty intense, right? He says, the Russian made the tree. That's clearly Kadosh Baruch Hu. The ma'isim of Adam are ma'isim of Adam. I don't see a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's your problem. If you think that the Bereshit is more present and more real and more obvious to you in the Maisim, which are of his handiwork, and what you're doing, you don't realize that is really the main purpose of the world. That's the main place where Kadosh Baruch Hu is present. You miss the whole point of the world. Because the point of the world is that the greatest place where Kadosh Baruch Hu is found is when human beings absorb it into themselves and express that in their actions.
Oh, that's interesting.
So Yaakov Avinu is the one who calls and says that the Bereshit's presence is in a Beis Elohim, which means we build a bias for him. We create his presence here. We bring him down here. Right? So it's interesting, you know, a thought, you know, taking about there's a society which they commune with God by going into the woods. Right. He says the place to commune with the Kodesh Baruch Hu is in your house. That you have to go into the woods to commune with the Kodesh Baruch Hu means you're missing a real understanding of what the Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence is. I would say it in different words. I'm going to say the same thought, but I would say it in different words. If I could ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu where he wants to be felt the most, he would say, where you live. I want your life to be that you feel me. If you need to step out of your regular life to find him, means you're not using the word the way he wants to. He doesn't want you to have to go into the mountains to see God. He wants you to be able to see God getting up in the morning and living your life, seeing the bracha that he gave you, using the abilities that he gave you, trying to feel the connection that you have, that he gave you a way to connect to him. That's what he wants you to do with life. Okay, you know, once in a while you need a break. You need pressure. Okay, fine. You take it. The other hand, there's a beautiful Maaseh of Hirsch. Hirsch wants to see the Alps.
I was going to say, isn't Hirsch the one who said to go see Dafka, go see the Alps, and you'd be held accountable if you don't?
So, quote of Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that a person is chayav to taste every food that comes available to him, which is kosher, right? Right? Every fruit, he should taste it. Because Kodesh Baruch Hu then asked you afterwards, why didn't you taste that fruit that I made for you? So the Russia made this beautiful Alps. I'm worried the Russia is going to ask me afterwards, why didn't you go see my beautiful Alps? See, yes, there is a grandeur that we see in the power, because I'll make a bracha on it. It's my make a bracha on the heart. Right? So there's a grandeur that you see over there. There's a bracha shakakala by Lamai. It's an extraordinary thing you see in the world. The Russian made such beautiful, powerful things in the world. The Chayyim says you don't make it with the shame of Malchus for different reasons, right? So we were in Portland a few summers ago. I don't know how many years ago it was 7-8 years ago, whatever it was. And from you go down to the coast. So there's some forests there, which have this. They have the second, you know, set of the largest trees. The largest trees, you have the you know, the California redwoods. This is like the second one. They're still pretty big. You stand next to them, you're like, so you make a bracha shakakalei without baruch shakakalei b'olam, without shem alfa. It's an extraordinary thing. You stand next to that tree, it's like, wow, you know. We understand that at the same time that if you don't get that wow when you put on tefillin in the morning, you're missing something. You only get that wow from the tree, not from the tefillin, you're missing something. Because Batson putting a tefillin is a much bigger wow than the tree. Because the tefillin is, the brush created a vehicle that you can actually bind yourself to him. That's a bigger wow than a tree. So he says, Yaftal Kimel Yefis, V'yishkan Baruch Leishem. So Noach says that the Japhetic culture, wow, it's a new word, right? Yaftal Kimel Yefis.
So what posture are you reading?
This is Parshas V'Yetzeh. That's the Parshas Noah, right? Now, he says that Japhetic culture will give a sense of beauty and will influence them to higher, nobler ideas. But V'Yishkan Baruch Leishem, but Bereshim's presence will be present in the tents, in the homes of Shem. Shem will be given the mission to be able to build a home where Kodesh Baruch Hu lives. Right? The famous Maaseh with the Kotzker, he asks his Talmidim, where's the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Right? Where can you find the Kodesh Baruch Hu? So they gave all different answers, of course, not the right answer, because the Rebbe always has something else. You know, so he says, so what's the answer? Where you let him in, that's where Kodesh Baruch Hu dwells, where you let him in. If you let him in, that's where he is. Right? There's a lot of the world which is busy kicking him out. So that this process of building homes where Bereshit lives, the first parsha that we have of Yaakov Avinu, you know, we have him getting the brachos, and now he's going out on his own, right? And he comes to the place of the Beis Hamikdash, and he rabbin is talking about yeah, but Silukim. This is going to become a Beis Silukim, right? But then he says a fascinating thought, which is at the end of the parsha. So what's the deal of Matseva versus Mizbeach? So Chazal tell us that the time of the Ovis, Matseva was considered loved by Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Ovis made Matsevas, these one stone Mizbeachos. But in the future, it's not going to be Mizbeach, and Matseva is also.
Is that the Bama?
No, Bama is, there's an issue of a Matseva, making out of one stone. It has to be built out of multiple stones. So he says that Matseva consists of a single stone. Mizbeach is an elevation built up of many stones. So which means the Mizbeach is made by man. You have to bring the stones together and make it. Whereas the Matseva, that occurs in nature, it occurs on its own. Right? So before Matan Torah, Hashem's rule was manifest primarily only the ways of nature. What means what we got from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's so Matseva corresponds to that. But after Matan Torah, the Bereshit said that the way you, the Bereshit was going to be revealed not so much of what man receives from him as what man does when he gets it from him. What does he do with it, and how does he give to Hashem? Not what he gets, what he gives. Right? What do you do with what you got? So the whole purpose of Torah was to give man a vehicle that they can bring the Bereshit's presence in. Right? Rosh is going to give us whatever he's going to give us. We're going to use that to bring the Rosh's presence here. So B'dafka Mizbeach represents this idea that you are going to create the reality of Hashem's presence. It's not whatever is here naturally, quote unquote, right? But that the whole point of Torah is that you're going to create something. A little bit of a tangent. See where we're going with this. Rabbi David Gottlieb, he's in Dor Sameach. So Rabbi David Gottlieb is a fascinating person. He used to be a professor of philosophy in Hopkins. He's about Shuvah, the Boston Chassid. Eventually became a full Boston Chassid. He used to come, the Bekesh and Strimel, had to go teach a Cholamoid. He'd go with his Bekesh and Strimel in Hopkins to his professor of philosophy. Eventually, he moved to Yerushalayim, and he's a Rebbe in Ursimach. And he's also he's very good because he can discuss all these kids coming in with all the philosophy issues, etc. He knows it all. So in the 80s, at some point in time, the art school put out a book from him called The Informed Soul. And it was different areas of questions that he would, deal with. And usually what he would present would be he would take a topic. It's I think it's four or five topics. And he would start with he would present an idea, and then there would be questions that they would ask on it, and he would address that, and then he would take it deeper and deeper and deeper, etc. So one of the questions is chosenness. One of the big questions that everybody grapples with is the idea of that I'm a nifker, these people which aren't from, people who are coming from, sounds racist, etc. What is the idea of chosenness? So he says one of the answers which people give to the idea of chosenness is the main idea that we're being chosen. We're chosen for a job. They can choose you to do a job. So Christ was given the responsibility to be the kahanim, the representative of Kadosh Baruch Hu to the nations, the Orla Amim, and Rehersha goes with that very much. So the chosenness is not so much a elevated status of privilege, but it's elevated status of responsibility. So that's one way. He says that clearly does not work with the classical sources of the Rishonim to not understand that it means that's what it means. They clearly see it being that there's something extraordinary about Klal Yisrael, something unique about Klal Yisrael, which then goes back to the question. So this week one of our friendly neighborhood senators accused the Jews that they think that they're better, right? Israel is built on the fact that Jews think that they're supreme, right? Right, so of course everybody says anti-Semitic, etc. Right, but they got a good point. This is why this is Zionism is racism. But what does chosenness mean? She says the best way to answer the question is giving you a way to look at what was the result of chosenness. Okay, the result of chosenness is the tzaddik. The result of chosenness is the tzaddik. That's what he writes. He says, what do I mean? That when you look at the people that Klal Yisrael has produced over the generations with these extraordinary people again and again and again and again, that means that Rosh Hashanah put a quality in Klal Yisrael through the Torah that he gave us and through the neshama that he gave us, which allows it to absorb the Torah to become something extraordinary. And then he gives a few, says, well, what do I mean? He gives a few examples of the stories that you have about the various Gedolim, which, you know, were like extraordinary. But I would say a different Likud on that. One of the most basic desires of man, we discuss like this, is existence. We don't want to be, we want to exist. We want to leave a mark. We want to know that we're here. Right? Those are really very, very deep needs that the human being has. So, Adam Rishon grappled with that. Adam Rishon came with it. I said like this. Okay, let's think it through. If I follow Kodesh Baruch Hu's will, so I'm not really doing it. All I am is being bought to Kodesh Baruch Hu. If I forge my own path, I'm going to create the world. Like the Rashi, the Yetzer comes and says, you're going to be buried alone. You're going to create worlds. See, the decision to forge my own path was, I am going to create a reality. And then I'm a real thing. I'm real. The reality is that it's wrong. It's the other way around. That Batsim, human being, doesn't really exist. We're a figment of Kodesh Baruch Hu's imagination. As much as we are dumb to Kodesh Baruch Hu, we have reality. We're part of a reality. Kodesh Baruch Hu is real. Hashem Elokim Emes, we're not Emes. Okay, a little bit philosophical over here, right? So when we see real people, we're drawn to them. There's a certain magnetism that they have. That person is so real. We like being with them, right? When you're with these people, the Gedolim, you want to be next to them. You just want to be next to them because they're so real. That's what he's talking about, right? So I told you the story of Reb Feitman had in Cleveland with Reb Moshe when Moshe was nifter. Reb Feitman, one of the rabbanim of Cleveland, he was the youngest of Cleveland. He was the youngest of Beechwood. Now he's in Five Towns. So when he was in Cleveland, Reb Moshe was nifter, and obviously that was in the papers. You know, this big, it was the largest funeral. You know, 300,000 people. It was in all the papers. So you have these conservative Jews, Reform Jews, who never really heard of him. Everybody all like excited. They want to know something about him. Like let's hear who this rabbi was. Tell me something about him, etc. So they invited Reb Feitman to speak. It was a Reform temple or a conservative place, whatever it was. I'm not sure what it was. So he went to a gifter. Discuss he should go, or give it, you know, gave him a certain ways to arrange it. He told me he should go and speak. So he went to speak. He brought a very large easel, and he put a big portrait of Reb Moshe on the easel. And he spoke of Reb Moshe. He said some stories, etc. There's a woman who became frum from that speech. She was so overwhelmed. She said, looking at the picture of Feinstein, you saw there's something more to him. There's something extraordinary to him. That he's a physical flesh and blood, but he's different. That's what chosenness is. That's what Rabbi Gottlieb was saying. That's what Torah is. That's the Rosh Hashanah's goal of the world, was to create human beings which they contain a Kodesh Baruch Hu inside of themselves. So Yaakovino, after the Torah is given, the main point is not what he gave us, it's what we did with it. So the void of a Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to be in the Mizbeach, not in the Mitzvah. The Rosh gave us a Mitzvah that he made himself. That's not the point. The point is, okay, what are you going to do with, what are you going to create with that? Are you going to create a vehicle to be a service to a Kodesh Baruch Hu? And that's an extraordinary thing. Okay. Then he makes this Neder to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rebbeinu says something Mitzvah Yehi Beis Elokim. I'm going to take a Mitzvah and I'm going to make it into a bias. Yaakovina already is making that promise. That we're going to take that Mitzvah and build a bias out of it. Okay. So that's, I think that's like the first point of the parasha. That the void of Golus, almost even more than in Eretz Yisrael, when you're Eretz Yisrael, you sort of, it comes with the territory. You have the Shekhinah there in the Beis Hamikdash. Beis Hamikdash you don't have to build it yourself. In Golus, if you don't build it, it's not going to happen. If you don't create that reality that Hashem is present with you, it's very easy to get lost. Kol Zman you have the Beis Hamikdash, even with the Beis Hamikdash, we got lost. That's why we lost the Beis Hamikdash. But Kal Vachomer when you're in Golus, I think that's the first point. Okay. I'm not saying the correct order, etc. The next point, Yaakov comes to Haran, and so he engages the Royim in a conversation. Then he says, he says, listen, it's not the time to gather. So Rashi brings over here that if you're the owners, you're not really getting the best out of out of what you have. And if you're a hired worker, you're not doing your job. You're not giving your employer the full deal that he deserves. My Shir Zichlo Baruch used to say that says my name is Yishai Pinchas. My mother used to call him Musar Mal sometimes. That was like, like he had no compunctions getting up and saying something. Like it's wrong. It's wrong. You gotta say something. The politically correct, he wasn't from that generation. He was blunt. He was really blunt. He grew up in the 20s and 30s. You got to picture this. This guy comes. He's a total stranger. Right? He meets the, asks him, for a little bit of help, where to find love, and it's such great. And Rabbi Yisrael, you should know what you're doing is wrong. You guys love it, you're not like, who cares? Why is it your business? So the stand for Emes was so powerful by him. Like, it's a guy, who cares? When a yid does, say something, it's not my business, it's not my place, mehekatesi. The problem with that is, and that's it's not that it's wrong, the times is the result of complacency, or even is eventually you accept it. I once heard from a chashav yid, in Eretz Yisrael, with the Shabbos, the screaming Shabbos. So he heard from somebody who was there, was like, obviously you have the kids, like, they're there for the fun, for the excitement, the whole thing, right? But then there's these Rishama Yidin, they clearly they're in pain. One of them said, he says, the reason I'm screaming Shabbos is I shouldn't accept the fact that it's okay to drive on Shabbos. I know I'm not going to change this person over here. Screaming Shabbos is not going to change him. I don't know, maybe that's going to change him or not by screaming Shabbos. But meanwhile, I'm accepting the fact that Jews drive on Shabbos. That I can't accept. So that's why I'm screaming Shabbos. Screaming Shabbos at myself. Don't ever accept that this is called normal. I have a neighbor who's not from, and I grapple with this issue every Shabbos. I mean, see him getting in and out of his car. I don't say good Shabbos. Like, what do you mean? I don't say good Shabbos to me. Like, how can you not say hello to me? Like, last Friday night, I'm walking home. So he's getting out of his car. Like, punked as I'm coming home. So I said good Shabbos to him. So he says back to me, Shabbos Shalom Avorach, something like that. He has some background, I had a few barking with him. Like, wow, that was interesting. So what's the other option? I don't want to see it. I don't want to live in Shabbos. So, as I walk away, I'm not saying, he's not holding by me changing him. Okay, yeah, if I make it my real focus, I'm going to work on him, maybe. It's not going there at this point in my life or his life. So I got to walk inside and say, wow, that was painful. This is driving a job. It's a nice guy, I love him, sweet guy. We help each other, he's helped me, I've helped him, we're neighbors. But I can't say that therefore I can condone what he's doing is wrong. I might not be able to correct him, but I have to make sure to myself that it's not acceptable. Because you're going to go into the world, you're going to be living amongst the world which is, does not use the world the way you, which is the right way to do it. I mean, how about you live in Eretz Israel with the Yidden Bismanoi that they should be using the world properly? But remember the Kabbal Kerm when you're in Golis. So you have to make sure that you maintain your vision of Emes. So it's very easy to mush somebody else about it. The parashah things that are around that describes Yaakovino's Avodah. The Rambam brings it down in the scariest part of them. Of how Erlich Yaakov was is a definition of what it means to be a Erlich, a worker. So Yaakovino, and the Torah describes it, the extraordinary measures of what he did to make sure that he served love and faithfully. So that Erlich kept that he was demanding from others, he was demanding from himself also. So that if you're a Muslim mouth to somebody else, but yourself you're not doing that, that's called a hypocrite. Now, it's not. Take that back. The famous Maaseh of the Chofetz Chaim about, you know, talks about the idea of, you know, the person says, I should give mutzah, I'm also bad. Like, I should point something out, I'm also bad. So he gave the mutzah with the fire breaking out in the city. So one time the king comes to the town, or the governor comes to the town, so they made this dinner in his honor, and then they, you know, put out the drinks. He starts drinking the water, and this water is like it's like muddy. He says, I'm telling you, from now on, I do not want you to use any muddy water over here. Okay? A little while later, a big fire breaks out in the town. The way they used to do the fire, they would take the water. So they didn't put it out, because the only water they had available then was muddy water. He said, not use any muddy water. He says, you idiots. When a fire burns, use any water is good enough. Even muddy water is good. So Chofetz Chaim said, it says, when a fire is burning, you're talking muddy water, you're talking not good. But it's better than nothing. You got to say something. That's what Chofetz Chaim is marshal, you know. So, but Yaakovino obviously held himself to a standard that there's a fascinating smog. The smog says that the Yidden have a responsibility to be erlich to the nth degree. Because if not, and the Goyim will see that we're not Erlich, when Mashiach comes, it's going to be tremendous Chil Hashem, because the Goyim are going to say, for these thieving Jews, you brought Mashiach. It's going to be a tremendous Chil Hashem, he says. So the Yidden have a responsibility to be bent over backwards in their Erlichkeits in moments. So that when Mashiach comes, he says, the Goyim are going to say, you know, they take and deserve it. And it's fascinating that, you know, throughout the literature, the Jew was synonymous with the cunning thief, you know, the cunning moneylender, you know. It's this language of disdain, Jew, you know, because money hungry, money greedy, etc. Now, if I want to exonerate the Jew, the answer is simple. You know, they took Jews and put them in society. They didn't let them have any land. They couldn't work the land. Didn't let them be involved in any of the guilds. So they couldn't do any trades. So the only thing they let them do is Jew was money lending, because the guys, they understood the prohibition of usury, that you can't lend any money at interest. But commerce needs money lent at interest, so the Jews did that job. So Shkriyach. So now they talk about Jews, they're always into money. Well, I have an answer. You know, what else do you want them to do? You know, well, they're peddlers, you know. But the Maisa, within that context, it became very, very muddy. To use, go back to the mushroom. I mean, you look at the tshuvas. You know, listen, people that had to live. It wasn't they were, you know, they were finding everyone just to have money. There's a question of many people. There's a question whether they're going to live or die. They're going to starve to death. Right? The people were poor, but there's so many tshuvas about fights about money. You know, claims back and forth. I mean, it's like, you know, the Mishardim and the Acharonim. You know, it's like if you want to get a picture of what Klai Yisrael was, you read the tshuvas. You know, obviously, they once said that the problem with Freud's theories is that he made it based on the people which came to him to the clinic. So making theories based on people which are crazy is not... but defining mankind based on people which come to who are crazy is not a good idea. So defining what Klaisa looked like based on with the Rechubas and Shilas is not a good way to do that either, 100%, because, like, you know, when things were going good, they didn't ask any Shilas, so that's not recorded. You know, the Rasha didn't talk about the days where there were no fights in Beis Din, right? So maybe 99% of the time there weren't fights in Beis Din. I don't know, but the Maisa said there were a lot of fights in Beis Din, right? You know, so I can understand that. I'm not judging it, etc. But that lakuna of the nth degree of Ehrlichkeit. More, you just have the more over there in Talmud. More says a story with Alexander Mukden. He was able to come to this country, and he meets the king. The king has heard of his name. He invites him in. You know, he's judging a case. You know, sit next to him. There's a fight between two people. Each one person is saying that he bought the field, and they found the gem in the field. So I didn't buy the gem, so the gem belongs to the seller. The seller said, "No, I sold you the field. I sold you everything in the field, including the gem. So it belongs to the buyer." So each one's trying to push the gem on the other person. Right, so the king says, "This is a difficult problem. He says, you have a son, you have a daughter, two of them should marry, and you should give the gem to them as a present." Wow, beautiful. Alexander Mukden is only like, you know. So she asks, like, you know, I didn't make a good judgment. He says, "No, it's fine." He says, "So how would you judge this in your land?" He says, I would have killed him and taken the land and the gem for myself. Right? That was a pretty honest answer. She says to him, "Does the sun shine where you live?" He said, "Yes." "Does the grass grow?" He said, "Yes." "Is there water?" He said, "Yes." "Do you have animals there?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Okay, now I understand." He says, "I don't understand how in the world you live in a place like that. Why should there be sun? Why should there be grass? Rather, there should be rain. But since you have animals, it's exclusive of the animals." Right? You like the cases, those are the beautiful cases where each person is trying to make sure they're doing the right thing. So I didn't buy that. So I don't want to take it. I meant to sell it to you. I don't want to keep it. Right? That's the more I was trying to say. That's how Bezin's case should be dealt with. Like, I don't want to touch Gzela. I don't want to hear Gzela. I once heard from Chaim Dov Keller, so that he spoke by a good convention, so I heard the tape. So he said that that Kleistel has had a tremendous growth in the area of Yeridaya. Kashos nowadays is much better than it was 50 years ago. In regards to Hechsherim being much more reliable, you know, much more better control, etc., etc. Yeridaya is much better than it was. The Kashos of the Mikvos, the Hidurim of the Mikvos, much better than it was. It's time to make sure that we same way, level of Hidurim we have in Yeridaya, we should have in Chesher Mishpat also. That was... So the second Lakuta, which we see in the parasha about the Golus, is obviously always true. But when you're in Golus, you're going to tend, you don't have a bite, you don't have a safe place. You're going to be on the run. You're going to be needing that finding the money. That's, you're in a base level. The guy's out to get you. He's constantly, and you're still there. So it's not just on being Ehrlich. It's being Ehrlich when you're dealing with the fellow who changed your payment 100 times. Right? Now, yes, you have a right to make sure you get your money, but at the same time, you were up those nights, you were there, no matter what it was, you took the responsibility of something which was a question of payment, you took the responsibility, right? Because we're not taking any chance to make sure that you did your work. Ehrlich. So the idea of not tolerating something which is improper, number one, and number two, living your life based on that. Right? Translate that into, so Yaakovino is building this bias. He's able to make his work into what is Hashem. Reverse, I think I told you, Reverse says that that Yeshua Rabba, right? What exactly does Yeshua Rabba mean? So Shmei, we spoke up multiple times, the Ibn Ezra says that the word shame is from the word shom, which means that's a way to point to say there it is. Right? You know that one. How many times have I said it? What?
I teach Shiva.
Right?
You can ask for someone. I'll let you ask. I'll look the same.
Good. Right. Okay. Fine. Don't repeat it anymore. Okay. Right.
I don't know the rest. Maybe the others want to hear it.
Right. Right. So, shame of Hashem means the way that we can point to say there's Hashem. There he is. What does that mean? We see Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence. We see how he acts. So everything we talk about, Sheamus of Hashem, I mean the different ways of Hashem acts in the world, those different ways to recognize and see there is Hashem. When he has Mishpat, that's a vehicle to see Hashem. That there's a judge which runs the world. When there's Chesed, it's a vehicle to see Hashem. So that's what means the different Sheamus of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Mevorach means to be increased. So first sees that Yehesh Merab Mevorach is a pledge. I'm going to guarantee the Rosham's name is going to be greater, which means the Rosham's, the awareness of his presence, the ability to see him will be greater in the world. I'm going to commit myself to live in the life that I'm going to make sure that there's more awareness of Kadosh Baruch Hu through me. So when I go to bed at night, I added more Kadosh Baruch Hu to the Bria. Kadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. I made the world more aware of his presence to the point you could see him. When I live a life which is so airless, obviously it's because my emunah may be talking and awareness because Baruch Hu runs the world. People see that, they say, wow, there must be a God. Wow, there's more godly presence in the world. So that's what Yehesh Merabah is. There's a famous maisa with the Chavetz Chaim. There was an article written by a secular reporter, actually a woman, who covered the Guna Convention back in 1926, I think it was.
The video?
What?
The video shot of him?
No. So she wrote up a description of when the Chofetz Chaim walked into the... she was covering the convention, and she writes a description of when the Chofetz Chaim came into the hall. She says there was a speaker speaking. All of a sudden he stops. And the whole place rises up on their feet. And they see this little man like shuffling up to the front. And the whole place, I didn't say anything extraordinary about him until he turned his face to me. And he says, then she writes, I saw the God of the Jews. She looked at the Chofetz Chaim's face and she saw godliness. She saw God. There's famous lines that they say from Reb Simcha Zissel, from Alta from Kelim, that he said the Darwin thinks man came from monkeys. I saw Reb Simcha Zissel, I know man did not come from monkeys. There's no way that such a human being could come from anything other than the godliness of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. My brother-in-law, my wife has two brothers, so the younger one, my wife's the youngest, but of the two brothers, the younger one is Howard. So his father-in-law was Rabbi Ron Bayarsky, Zichlo Baruch. Rabbi Bayarsky was a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. Two brothers in Baltimore, Rabbi Shmuel Bayarsky. So Rabbi Shmuel Bayarsky's son-in-law is Rabbi Wasserman and Yeshiva in Denver Yeshiva. So the younger brother, Rabbi Ram, also learned, he learned from the Chofetz Chaim Rad. Now, I have to describe him to you. Short man, he was a shaykhid. His pronunciation was even a shaykhid. He was a litvak to the nth degree. Like, you would try and milk him for a mice about the Chofetz Chaim. It just didn't register. Pesach Kron, one of his books, has that he came down to Baltimore especially to meet with Rabbi Bayarsky to get some stories about the Chofetz Chaim. He has a page and a half in the book, and that's it. That's how much you can get out of him. Right. Okay. You want to talk to Rabbi Bayarsky in learning? Anywhere in Shas. He was a Shreichet, but you could talk to him anywhere in Shas. Right. And always with a Nevis. I talked to him, and he says, you know, so what's the learning? He says, you know, I learned about Bastards, you know. So he starts saying over him, saying, Mom, it just happened to see a fascinating stipler on that sugya. Right? The first time he said, like, wow, that's really extraordinary, you know, just happened to see. Like, after the fourth time, I stopped believing him already. Like, you know, wow, like, you know, Mama's, I just happened to see a Miri on that. I just happened to, like, oh, wow, you know, like, right, tell me about it. Right? Okay, that's the backdrop. Listen to this line. My sister-in-law once asked her father, is the picture we have of the Chofetz Chaim true? Is that what he looked like? And he said, there's no photo which can capture what the Chofetz Chaim looked like, because there was a light inside of his face. And the picture, that doesn't go into the photos. When you saw the Chofetz Chaim, you saw a shine in his face. This is a Litvak talking. Not a Chassidus, this is a Litvak talking. Who doesn't have a Maisa but the Chofetz Chaim. But that was the description of what the Chofetz Chaim looked like. Rabbi Tauber says a gorgeous pshat. Zalman Goldstein told me that in Parshas, when Ram and Sarah come to Mitzrayim, he says a lashon over there that now I realize how beautiful you are. Rashi brings the Chazal because of the siyush of Behem, right? So he says, So Noah is translating something to mean now. So Rashi says, what do you mean now? You're married for 80, 50, 60 years. Like he says, because of Sias, he never noticed how beautiful she was. Now that's an extraordinary Jacob. Wow. Rabbi Tauber suggested the pshat based on this idea. So you can imagine that's the Chofetz Chaim. Imagine what the story made her look like. Avram saw a story. He saw the light of sorrow. He never focused on her physical beauty because it was so overpowering. The other part of it, he didn't notice the physical beauty. Rashi says that when they mice. So what was the mice? So they were traveling over water, and he looked down in the reflection, and he saw the reflection. And he saw how beautiful she was, because there all you saw was the physical part of it. He says, "Wow, she's taka physically beautiful. Also, I never noticed that before, because I was so taken by the other part, which is so much more important, so much more powerful." Does he suggest a pshat over here? I don't know if it's a pshat or not, but it's a beautiful thought. Right? So you can imagine the avoid of a person is to bring the presence of the Kodesh Baruch Hu into the world. The more you do that, the more you become a vehicle of the Shekhinah. You become the presence of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the first step is the Erlich Kodesh. So the more you become the person that the Baruch Hu defines you, that through you, more Kodesh Baruch Hu is more present in the world, you become the vessel to bring Kodesh Baruch Hu into the world. So Yaakov, his Erlichkeit was an expression of that idea. When you saw Yaakov, you saw a person who, a person was so real that I can't take that which is not mine. It's not shy. They say with the Maisa, with the Chiddush HaRim, the Sfasemus brings the Maisa, Chiddush HaRim was his grandfather. Then one time, it was a house which was open, So obviously, eventually, something was stolen, right? And something of value. They mentioned to Chush HaRim that they think one of the guests had taken it. Chush HaRim says, "How could it be?" He says, "Lo signovu." He says, "You can't steal." That's what he said. So the Sasamis said, he said it with such power, I felt like there was a wall between a human being and the ability to steal. The Torah's iser is so powerful, it's impossible to steal. It's not shy. You can't. It's like a wall. You can't get through it. You can't get near such a thing. That's what it means that Yaakovino, was an Erlich worker. It's an expression of, there's a very element of the world who gives me the responsibility of not, I can't say something was not mine. So I have to be, I made a commitment. There's a question of emes, there's a question of geneva, I can't do it. I can't get near that. If it means that I have to absorb the loss, I'm absorbing the loss. Because the other option is a million times worse. That increases the Russian's presence in the world. And the final result of when you do that, everything that you're doing is constantly that madrega. So the result is a Chofetz Chaim. That's why you have the story of the Chofetz Chaim. He checked through every single page of the Sefer. You know, I mean, that's very tedious. But what's the other option? How can I tell you something which I don't know for sure that I'm giving you something which is you're getting your money's worth? Maybe there's a page missing. Maybe the page didn't print well. It's smudged. You know, last year at the dinner, the gift they gave me was an Avos Chesed printed in the lifetime of the Chofetz Chaim. It's more extraordinary because it belonged to Shiva Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim Stein's Avos Chesed from Europe. So that's like the very. When they gave it to me, I was like overwhelmed with emotion. Like, you know, I when Merkin was holding it, I saw Rashiva's name in the front. I motioned to my wife, I needed a tissue. That's when I motioned. I said, It's beautiful. You can still read it. It's beautiful paper. The paper's intact. The letters are clear. It's yellowed with age. You know, it's brown with age. You know, but it's totally usable. It's printed in 1886. That was the Erlich of the Chofetz Chaim. You're going to print it with nice binding. You're going to print it with good paper. You're going to print it with good ink. You're going to check every single page. Make sure every single page. And after it's finished, they would write in the front that they checked it. Before they sold it. Like, what's the other option? I'm going to take your money and give you something which might not be acceptable. I can't do that. I don't try. Yes, it's very tedious. And yes, it's time consuming. Yes, I have so many other more important things to do. But I still can't take your money and not give you something which is your full value. So that's the second thought. The third thought, and then we'll let everybody go. There's a beautiful word from the Rebbe Yom. So Yaakov comes and calls his wife out to the field. Rachel comes and says, "Go back home." So Yaakov calls Rachel. They go out to the place, nobody can hear them. You should know. You're probably not so happy with it anymore. Your brother's like, it's not going good. You should know that I've been very eloquent with your father. You should know he's really taking advantage of me. And he goes, if he says, this is the payment, he changed the payment to this, everything is there. And the brother should make sure I got enough. Okay? And the brother came to me and said, it's time to go home. So the Rachel answered him. Are we going to get an important head of the herd? When you came, Rashi pointed out that he didn't have any sons. Because of your presence now, he was going to have sons. We're not going to get any portion. The sons are going to get it. Not only that, he sold us away from marriage. He didn't even give us a dowry. It was the opposite. He made you pay for it. And therefore, whatever the Bereshit gives you, we definitely deserve. And Bereshit told you to go back, you know, we'll listen. So here's the deal. Like, you know, Bereshit can't do within a time to go back. First of all, you should know it makes sense. A lot of money, etc. And by the way, yeah, Bereshit says, okay, fine. That's a pretty strange response. He said, what were they saying? They were saying is that serving Kadosh Baruch Hu, you don't lose. They needed to explain to themselves, in Olam Hazeh, they're not losing by serving Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not like, you know, listen, you're right. Shema Yim, you're going to get Alekut Tazachin. And this one, it's horrible, it's terrible, it's Ivey. But it must come a time, not so here in Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's not the attitude. The attitude is, what is Hashem is the best thing that ever happens in your life. It's only can work out for the best. How do you say, we'll figure it out. There's a famous, you know, line from Rav Moshe said the reason why these people who Shomer Shabbos when the kids went off the derech, because the parents would come over, you know, and say, it's so scary to be a kid. I lose my job. And they're kvetch about it. you need to understand Yiddishkeit is an extraordinary opportunity. Give it over to your children. How wonderful it is to be a Jew. And yes, there's a part of it, but right now it's very difficult to turn this challenge, I don't know, and it's difficult to do it. But that Yiddishkeit is trying to be a Yid. That's the message. The kid says, well, why should I want it? Right? I mean, any intelligent kid would say, like, it was taka so shrier, so I fill this nish, I'm out. Which is what they did, loyally enough. So, Shmuel Lepion says that, you know, the Nakudo, and Yaakov is the same thing. You should know, he says, listen, your father's not so happy with me staying here. He tried to think, and by the way, Bershon said, it's time to go home. I mean, the deal is, we need to go home. He says, fine. So say, Bershon said, time to go home. He says, yes, time to go home. Goodbye. Like, what's the whole conversation over here? Because that's not how you do it. Trying to convince him, listen, you know, it's not a horrible, but Bershon says, l'shem Shemayim. It's the marshal which the Baalei Mussar give is it's the spring. You take a spring and you press it down and down and down. You pressure. Eventually, what happens is it pops back up, and it pops up, it just flies. Forcing yourself again and again and again to something which you really don't want to do, it'll work a certain amount of time, but eventually it's going to plot. So the Baal HaTanya says that there are two parts of the avodah of the person. There's a void of iskafio, which is kfiya, forcing. There's a void of ishafka. The Zohar says it, Revol brings the Zohar says it, that tchilas avoida is pushing yourself, even though it's not comfortable. But you have to get to the point where you have simcha that you're doing it. It has to feel good. And if that means that you need to bring the goof along for the ride by convincing the goof it's also good, explain to the goof why it's good, you should do that too. That's the Sher Das says that was the idea of the Rabban says in last week's parsha. That's why Yitzchak wanted to eat something from Esav. This way, he would be in a good state, and his goof would also be in this happy mode, and then he'd be able to give the bracha with a full being. So the Sher Das says because we're human beings, we still have a goof. And if we're just gonna, we can't just ignore the goof and just pressure the goof, because eventually the goof is not coming along for the ride. So the avoda is to make a balance where the goof feels that it's getting what it needs and and then it will willingly and happily come along for the ride to help the neshama do what it has to do. So again, much of that's true in Eretz Yisrael. So much more so in the challenges of Golus, we need to find a way that there's simcha. I think the Velt says that's one of the people to understand. You know, the Velt says that more than the Jews did for Shabbos, Shabbos did for the Jews. So Rush writes one place, he writes a beautiful thing. You have to, you know, Shabbos is an extraordinary thing. The lowest Jew, the peddler, etc., Shabbos, he's a king. Yes, you know, whatever the food was, it was better. There is no work. You're sitting at home. You're with your family. You push it. Push it gave you something to hold on to. That life isn't so bad. So besides the spiritual element, the ruchnius, etc., there was an element. Shabbos dafka requires einik. We need the dafka to have some element where the goof is not being totally crushed. If you do that, eventually it plotzes. If it doesn't plotz by you, it plotzes by your kids. And that's, you know, so these people which, you know, they trend this Baalei Avodah, et cetera, and push. The kids, you know, couldn't deal with it. Okay, some thoughts.